And this is KPCW 806 on this Tuesday. It's April 1st, but the snow is no joke. And on the phone with us from ABC Forecast Center, we got meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Hey, as we told you yesterday, no April Fool's joke here. We're talking about the weather, just doing what the weather does in Utah here as we've got a transition from spring to winter time overnight, and that's brought in some changes out there. So we've got that wintry scene. Now, we've got off and on snow showers that will actually continue to kind of redevelop this afternoon. In fact, as we try to warm it up a little bit during the day, that will only provide the instability to kick off more scattered snow showers. So expect those snow showers, maybe not snowing all day constantly, but off and on snow showers are likely throughout the day. And that will be both in Park City and into the Heber Valley. In fact, as we go throughout this afternoon in the Heber Valley, we could pick up an additional 1 to 2 inches of snow as we go throughout the day on top of what we've had. And we'll still see that snow kind of tapering off by late this evening, but high temperatures only climbing into the upper 30s to near 40 in the Heber Valley, and we'll stay in the 30s in Park City with that snow continuing. Now, so going to tonight, we may get a little bit of a lull or a break in the activity here as we see one storm system moving away, but another one quickly follows this first one as we go into your Wednesday afternoon. So we'll see a chance of more snow showers redeveloping Wednesday afternoon. Now, when you're talking about the snow shower chances, they're going to be hard to produce more than about an inch or two of snow each day just because they're going to be scattered in nature, but we can still see a quick covering of snow, I guess, as you want to call it, as you go throughout your Wednesday with that activity. And the chance of snow showers will continue to remain on the likely side, both in the Heber Valley and in Park City as we go towards your Thursday afternoon. So both today, tomorrow, and right on into your Thursday afternoon, we'll see those off and on snow showers that will remain fairly likely across the area. And it will stay on the wintry side, but we will begin to try to slowly warm those temperatures up. So we'll be looking at high temperatures on your Wednesday in the Heber Valley, climbing into the low 40s, the upper 30s in Park City. And then by the time we get towards your Thursday, we're looking at highs in the mid 40s for us in the Heber Valley and highs in the low 40s for Park City. By Friday, we'll keep that chance of scattered snow showers continuing, believe it or not, especially in the afternoon hours, but high temperatures on Friday in the Heber Valley climb into the upper 40s to near 50 degrees, and in Park City we'll climb into the mid 40s for highs. So even though we'll keep that chance of wintry weather through the end of the week, we'll slowly see a warming trend with our temperatures, and that leads us to the weekend. As we get towards your Saturday, we're looking pretty good. We'll call it partly cloudy on your Saturday in the Heber Valley, highs climbing into the low 50s. In Park City, we'll see those highs climbing into the mid to upper 40s. And again, as we start to dry things out by your Sunday, we've got lots of sunshine. How about the mid 50s for us as we get into the Heber Valley? But we'll be seeing those highs climbing into the low 50s for our friends in Park City. So definitely a warming trend ahead as we get towards the weekend. But I'll tell you, Leslie, it seems like an April Fool's joke, but nope. On April 1st, we have switched the clock back to what it should be like in January with off and on snow showers for days and, chilly temperatures with well below average numbers.
Oh, yeah, the roads already are snowpacked at this point. I mean, it came down really quick here.
Yes, I've been monitoring that I-80 eastbound traffic there, and, it's definitely creating some slowdowns. So be aware of that throughout the day.
Okay, Cedric, thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:09. And as Cedric did mention, I mean, I-80 looks like it's a mess. There was an accident reported, I-80 westbound, which was blocking, backing up traffic. So let's see. They said that they hope to have that cleared by about 8:45. But if you do have any updates, you can certainly text us, 435-655-8255. Take a look now in the backcountry. On the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Dave. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, for today, we're looking at an overall considerable avalanche danger with all this new snow and wind. There's likelihood that humans will trigger shallow soft slab avalanches in the upper elevations, and the avalanche danger will go down as people drop down into those mid and lower elevation slopes where there's going to be a little bit less snow and less wind. Yesterday, we had no reports from the backcountry, but people did report that there was good travel to be had on slopes that hadn't been impacted by this big warm up last week.
Okay, Dave, thanks.
Thank you.
And also, Park City Municipal saying to expect delays for the 4 orange bus. It is detouring on DeRoyal Street due to some unsafe conditions there on Wheaton Way. Also, the trolley has been suspended until conditions improve on Main Street. So, again, it may take you a little bit longer to get up to the Silver Lake area if you're riding the bus. And again, if you do have any traffic or road conditions, you can always text those to us at 655-8255. We did hear that it was definitely a slow ride there along 224. And again, the backup there on Interstate 80 with a traffic accident happening east westbound. Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow with a preview of this week's county council meeting. Also, the new Wasatch Immigration Project attorney Laura Rojas will be joined by new board member Enrique Sanchez with an update on their work in the community, and the CEO of Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox, discussing what's next with the Treasure Hill Conservation easement. And for full transparency, Summit Land Conservancy is a financial supporter of KPCW. Also, stay tuned for This Green Earth. Today's guests include Ryan Langendorf, a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, who works with Doak Lab, lead author of a recent study shedding light on sea otters as a keystone species helping to regenerate kelp forests. Then marine biologist Rania Steinbeck shares more about the world of marine fungi and the role they play in degrading plastics. All of that coming up in This Green Earth, heard every Tuesday from 9 to 10. It's 8:13. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Wasatch County Council meets tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have County Manager Dustin Graybow. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. First, the governor did not veto House Bill 356. Again, this would requiring districting of all county councils. He says that this might be taken up in a special session. Have you heard anything when that might be?
I've not heard any date yet, but we hope to work with the legislature to maybe make some tweaks to that bill.
Yeah, what does Wasatch County hope a revised bill might look like?
Originally, the bill, as proposed, wouldn't have affected Wasatch County. I think that's maybe what our goal is, to be able to maintain our current five districts with two at-large. That way, all residents get to vote for three county council members and not just one.
Okay, so did you ever get a response to your letter to the governor asking for him to veto it?
I don't believe so, no. I think it was helpful in that it was informative to them of some of the issues that the bill presented.
And any other bills that have come to light that could impact Wasatch County that you just didn't catch as the season kind of came to a furious fast end?
You know, I think there are, even as recently as a couple months ago, there were some bills that came out of the last legislative session that I only became aware of how they impacted us. So it can be really tough. I mean, when they pass hundreds of bills with many impacts, some of them, you know, have a line in them somewhere that you might not associate with the general content of the bill. So it can be tough. I think the big ones that we're still wrapping our arms around is HB 368, which has a lot of impacts on development processes. That's going to affect every entity across the state.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Largely what the bill does is it makes changes to infrastructure requirements, building requirements, the way that bonding works. You know, makes quite a bit of changes that, at least for Wasatch County, we're going to have to totally revamp the timelines of when we do certain types of bonding, so that now warranty bonds don't come at the beginning of the project, they come after a construction project is done and things like that.
Okay. Hey, at the council's retreat last week, we heard from council members saying that people really don't have a clue about what's happening in the Jordan Oasis. And okay, so some people live under a rock, but I mean, I've been sounding the alarm for a decade, it seems. Wasatch County leaders have always supported the development that MIDA was bringing into the area. Are there some second thoughts about it?
No, I think it's really just grappling with the reality of it. You know, like you said, we've been planning on it for decades, but now that it's here, it's coming to grips with, well, what does this mean? How do we ensure that we can do the best with the circumstances we're given? How do we minimize the negative impacts and maximize the positive ones?
Yeah. Councilmember Mark Nelson says he sees the Jordanelle Basin as the county's cash cow. And I guess I'm trying to understand why.
I mean, you're talking about an area that will have an incredible amount of economic activity. And I think for Wasatch County, this might end up being something similar to the Kimball Junction area as far as the tax impact that it has on Summit County. This would have an impact on Wasatch County. I think all of the countywide sales taxes apply in this area. That means that our EMS sales tax that voters approved is going to be grow as this area comes online, as is our TAP tax, Trails, Arts, and Parks. We're going to be able to do more with those things because of the economic activity in this area.
All right. Well, take a page from Park City's playbook here. And you do realize that, I mean, building this tourist-based economy requires workers, lots of them. So who do you get to work in these establishments? Where are they going to live? What are we going to do about the traffic? I mean, or is it not bad enough? I mean, these are very expensive solutions, and the mantra has ever been new growth doesn't pay its own way.
Yeah, and I think the idea is that those are the types of things that we need to grapple with. Those are things that we have been. I think we have the benefit of trying to be able to learn from some of Park City's experiences. And I think we also have the opportunity to make our own mistakes, for better or for worse, on some of these issues. What we are doing, though, is we are working with the stakeholders in the area to make sure that we are providing things like workforce housing, affordable housing. I think by us standing up our transportation network with High Valley Transit is one of the ways in which we're trying to do that preemptively so we can establish those good connections. We've been proactive on the bypass, which we think getting workers up from Utah County is going to be an important part of how we get people in and out of that area. So it's very complicated and multifaceted. We know it's not going to be easy, but we have a lot of good people in places that can make a lot of positive impact.
Right. Okay. And so you're setting aside funding as well to do this?
Yeah. I mean, our transit sales tax, we've implemented two portions out of the five. And again, that's a sales tax that's going to generate out of that area. We do have planning dollars on other things that we're working on. We're doing a general plan update right now. I think that's going to impact this area and others as well. So all of these things, you know, it's kind of all part of the big picture.
All right. And I also wanted to ask you about, I mean, this is, I believe, it's a UDOT issue because it takes right there at the interchange there of Mayflower and US 40. But the lighting is so poor at night. Is there anything being done to fix that? So people, I mean, it's really difficult to see, especially if there's snow on the ground where the lanes are.
Yeah, I think UDOT is looking at potential changes for that interchange just because, you know, it's going to be very busy. And so they're examining, you know, maybe a light makes sense, not just a street light, but also traffic lights or other things like that, just to make sure that everyone can be safe and that you can get through that intersection easily.
Okay, kind of back to the retreat. Anything that you were directed to do? I mean, what are you going to be working on, I guess, as a result of what the council had to say at the retreat?
There were a lot of takeaways. A lot of them were meetings that we needed to schedule to discuss various subjects. So that includes, we have reached out to Heber City and others to make sure that we have more regular one-on-one council meetings with them. And we're trying to work on just improving our coordination cross-jurisdictional. I think there are a number of projects construction-wise that we are diving in on. We're beginning a master planning process for the sheriff's office. We had a discussion about our capital facilities needs. That's even as we're kind of in the middle of our courthouse project and kicking off our admin building project. So we have a lot of those things. And again, those projects are feasible because of the economic activity coming out of that Mayflower area, that we can do these things without going back to property taxpayers and needing to raise taxes to cover the costs of these infrastructure projects.
Okay. As part of Wednesday's meeting, council will be getting an update on that courthouse expansion project. How's it going?
It's actually going really well. It's a complicated project just because it's a current facility in use that has a 24-hour need, right? That there's a public safety component to it. So we're doing it in basically three phases as we build new additions, remodel old ones. So it takes a little bit longer. I think it's about a 20-month build, and we're hoping to be done probably by the end of this year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So still on time and on budget then?
Yep.
All right. Also, during Wednesday's meeting, you'll get an annual update from the Wasatch Open Lands Board. Has all of the bond money been spent at this point?
So the council has obligated all of the $10 million that we had authorized through our election in 2018. But not all of it has been spent. As you know, many of these projects take multiple years to get all of the funding in place. So we funded a little over $3 million. I think we'll like another 1.5 is close at hand. And then there are some other projects that might be a little bit further out than that.
All right. And again, how maybe some of the highlights of how that bond money has been spent?
Yeah, I think the first project was one of our more prominent ones. It was a Kohler Dairy Farm that is adjacent to Midway and extends out into the North Fields. We spent about $2 million on that project. We've done some preservation in other areas, including the Mirfield Park with Heber City. We approved Alan Giles and Pear Tree Llama, the Holmes Dairy. We have the Gerch easement in the North Fields, and there's probably a couple more that I'm missing here, but a lot of, I think, exciting projects that will allow us to preserve the agricultural nature of our community, which is really, again, something that came out of that retreat, was how much of a priority it is to try and be proactive about how we're managing what the growth looks like and what the fate of our county is.
Yeah. Any talk of floating a second open space bond?
Yeah, there has been some discussion from the Open Lands Board. There have been some changes on this front as far as the state legislature this year passed a bill that changes how rollback taxes are allocated, so that now Wasatch County will be collecting 100% of the rollback taxes and for use for open space preservation. So right now I think the Open Lands Board and the County Council are kind of weighing the benefits of just using that new funding source, or if it's necessary to consider another bond. If they did, it would go to a vote, but I think that's far from settled at this point.
All right. Later on, the County Council will consider appointing members to the Tourist Tax Advisory Board. What's this?
So this is a board that every county is obligated to provide that helps make recommendations on the use of the transient room tax and the restaurant tax. Our Heber Valley Tourism Economic Development Agency kind of administers this board, and this board makes recommendations on what types of grants to award and how the funds should be allocated for a wide variety of uses.
Yeah, so how is that TRT divided? The chamber gets how much?
Yes, we have about half of it going to support our Heber Valley Tourism and Economic Development, which also, in addition to that, operates as the chamber. And then we use a number, a pretty sizable chunk of the remainder to support the recreation elements of our Parks and Recreation Department. That includes some of the promotion and infrastructure for those events.
Okay, so 50% of the TRT come into Wasatch County then?
So it goes into the Parks and Rec. Mm-hmm. Is not quite half, but it's close.
Okay. And give me an idea. I mean, how much money are we talking about in terms of the total take on the TRT each year?
Yeah, so our transient room tax generates a little over $4 million. We do use some of it for mitigation. One of the uses is for our search and rescue, because they have spend a lot of time rescuing tourists in summer and winter. So a little over $4 million is how much our transient room tax generates. A restaurant tax tends to be closer to about $2 million.
Okay. Also, just wanted to kind of touch bases. I'm sure we'll be talking about this a lot in the years to come. But in terms of the Olympics, what kind of planning have you started on?
Yeah, so we've been coordinating with Morgan County and Summit County to talk about kind of best practices when it comes to this. Really, this was a discussion point that we had at our retreat last week. And really what we're hoping to do is coordinate with the Utah Organizing Committee to make sure that we know how exactly to plug in. Most of what we are focusing on right now is kind of preparing infrastructure plans that we think will align with the Olympics priorities. I think that includes primarily transportation and transit infrastructure, as well as potentially housing that may facilitate the games, but then in the long run, provide housing in Wasatch County as well.
Okay, Dustin, anything else you wanted to mention?
Not today.
All right, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Dustin Graybow is the manager of Wasatch County. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:27. Well, a Provo man has been arrested for alleged ski thefts at Deer Valley Ski Resort. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that he's been investigated for thefts at other ski resorts as well.
Police say they identified the 22-year-old suspect using Deer Valley Resort's cameras and ticket scanners. They suspect him of multiple ski thefts, including one in Big Cottonwood Canyon. A Deer Valley guest reported their skis went missing from Snow Park Lodge March 12th, and the Park City Police Department found footage of the victim and a second skier, the alleged thief, placing their skis on the same rack. The video shows the second skier return and take the victim's skis to a black Subaru Outback in the parking lot. He changes out of his mask, helmet, and goggles and returns for his original skis. Officers then checked other days the suspect skied at Deer Valley. Police say the suspect appeared again on camera March 15th using the same skis stolen 3 days prior. The video evidence goes back to last season when the same man appears to steal a pair of skis April 8th, 2024. Between then and March of this year, police say he is on video carrying four different sets of skis out of Deer Valley. Officers believe those were either not reported to local police or potentially reported to jurisdictions outside of Park City. Before arresting the 22-year-old, police surveilled his apartment near Brigham Young University. They say the Subaru had skis matching the ones reported stolen attached to the roof. Police searched the apartment March 27th and say they found skis matching the ones stolen last April and this March. The 22-year-old has an Icon Pass, which allows access to resorts in the Cottonwood Canyons, too. He allegedly admitted to stealing the Deer Valley skis and told police he'd stolen an additional pair from Brighton Resort. Park City Police contacted the Unified Police Department, which they say is investigating thefts at Snowbird and Solitude Resorts, too. The Deer Valley theft suspect's Icon Pass also shows he skied at those resorts over the past year. He hadn't been charged as of Monday. He was booked into the Summit County Jail March 27th and released. The 22-year-old has been barred from returning to Deer Valley as a condition of his release. Deer Valley Resort is a financial contributor to KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Once again, we've got 23 degrees here and snow in Old Town Park City. Again, I-80 looking like a mess, but very slow going. So again, you're going to need to give yourself some extra time. Looks like we still have that crash reported westbound on I-80 there before the top of Parley Summit. Again, if you do have any road or weather conditions to report, you can text those, 435-655-8255. Can't pick up the phone right now. Anyway, taking a look now at Wasatch Immigration Project has hired its first full-time attorney to help those navigate the immigration system. Joining me now in studio, I have attorney Laura Rojas, who is joined by one of the newly named board members for Wasatch Immigration Project, Enrique Sanchez. Thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, Laura, let's have you start. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born and raised in Miami, Florida, so was truly surrounded by immigrants my entire life. Went to University of Michigan and worked as a foster care case manager in both Detroit and Miami, and then decided to go to law school after that experience, and really stayed focused on work in the public interest sector. I was an assistant public defender in Miami for just over a decade.
All right, what brought you to Utah?
Well, my husband started a company that gave us some flexibility about 10 years ago, and we liked the lifestyle out here. Our kids were young enough, so we gave it a try, and we are still here.
Okay, so you've been serving as a volunteer attorney before accepting the full-time position, huh?
Yes, I have. Yes, I was lucky enough to meet John. Well, I knew Maggie from our girls going to McPolin Elementary together, and she approached me because we had spoken probably at a homeroom classroom party, Halloween or something, about how we'd like to become more involved with learning about how to help local immigrants navigating the system. And she met John, who had been volunteering at Immigrant Legal Services for quite some time, and he agreed to help us learn, which was really fantastic. He's probably one of the most compassionate, intelligent people I've ever met. So he guided Maggie and I, and Karen joined forces with us, and it's been quite an experience, really.
So why was this a job you wanted full time?
Well, I still had another job because I needed to work. And working with Karen and John and Maggie has been incredibly fulfilling. And the work itself is, I think, a combination of intellectually stimulating and also fulfilling. So somehow this community came together and we were able to, WIP was in a position to hire a full-time staff attorney. So I went through the interview process, and it just was something I didn't really anticipate happening quite so soon. So the thought of working with them and Evelyn Cervantes and Jocelyn Monsalve, who are working in our office as well, was incredibly appealing, and I feel very lucky.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit about the caseload in a minute. Sure. But Enrique, as a new board member, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, we've known you for a while now. Grew up here in Park City.
Indeed. I am no stranger to KPCW or anyone here in Park City. But yes, my name is Enrique Sanchez, and I'm proud to be a new member of the Wasatch Immigration Project. As you know, Leslie, I grew up here in Park City. My family and I moved to Park City because of the work opportunities that came from the 2002 Winter Olympics. And so my family has been a part of the community since 2000, working multiple jobs where immigrants are the backbone of our economy, especially here in Park City. Those include hospitality jobs, which are our restaurants, our hotels, our ski resorts. And so growing up and always just being a part of the community and seeing how important that workforce was and seeing it in my own family and also seeing just the lack of resources that we would need to, be able to access legal help was something that I also very much noticed growing up. And so to see what the Wasatch Immigration Project is doing and providing that type of service that was always needed growing up is incredibly fulfilling for me to see in full circle, because again, like growing up and seeing friends and family suffer because they either got bad legal advice or because they couldn't afford an attorney, it was something that really held people back from being able to get legal status.
Yeah, and you've kind of had to navigate the immigration waters yourself. I mean, a DACA recipient and I mean, how... Still,
exactly.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. I myself am still a DACA recipient. I was fortunate enough to have a work permit early on. In 2012 was when President Obama at the time signed the executive order that provided DACA recipients like myself a work permit. And so that allowed me to be able to contribute to the economy. And that is something that, I think is what the minimum that a lot of the people who have been here for decades should get is a work permit, the ability to legally work in this country without fear of being deported at any time.
Yeah, but really nothing's changed.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this is an issue that we have had in this country. Our last immigration solution was 40 years ago. And so times have changed and the law hasn't changed. And so it's time for Congress and President Trump to come up with a permanent solution for people who have been in this country contributing to the economy.
Yeah. So why was it important for you to be part of the immigration project?
Yeah, I think, for me, Park City has always been home, regardless of where I'm at, regardless of what I'm doing. I always love to come back to this community and give back. And I know that that's something that Wasatch Immigration Project is doing. Both Laura and Maggie are incredible attorneys, and I've seen them work with our community. And so for me to come back and help in any capacity, I've had the opportunity to be on several boards and learn the process of being on boards. And so I'm extremely excited and happy to be able to bring back some of the skill set that I've learned through other boards to make sure that the Wasatch Immigration Project is as successful as possible. And we couldn't do it without, our volunteer attorneys as well as the contributions and donations from folks.
All right, and you joined by other new board members as well? Who are they?
Correct, exactly. We have Diego Zagara, who's part of the Park City Community Foundation, and Joanna Saucedo, who is with the People's Health Clinic. Both incredible community members who have also been here for decades. I grew up with Joanna myself. We went to preschool together, actually. And Diego and I have had a very close relationship. You know, he was part of the Holy Cross Ministries, and I got to meet him early on. And so both of them are great board members as well. There is also Pater, who I don't fully know yet, but I'm extremely excited for her to also be in this role. I know she's got great experience with, I believe it's the Pancreas Cancer Foundation that she comes from, and so I think we each bring a great skill set to the board.
So what is the immigration situation right now? Nationally, of course, we are hearing about immigration roundups, you know, with, undocumented immigrants getting, going home, being sent somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all over the country, that's what we are seeing. We're seeing large operations of deportations, and it's typically being, held in areas where either it's considered a sanctuary city, or there's areas where there's a specific sector that is known to hire undocumented immigrants, so that, is like farm workers and stuff like that. I believe that, yes, I think people who have committed violent crimes in this country should be deported. There's no doubt about that. I think that the border should be secure, but I think that we can do that at the same time as also provide legal pathways for people who have been in this country and contributing to the economy and paying their taxes. And there should be, there's no reason why we can't do both.
All right. And looking back last year, Laura, looks like the project was extremely busy, filing almost 200 applications for immigration. I mean, is that what Wasatch Immigration Project does, files applications?
We do a variety of things. We have monthly consults with as many people as we can fit on our schedule. There tends to be a wait list to get a consult at this point, but really our primary purpose is to sit with individuals, look over their situation, and each situation is different, and try to determine whether there is an option for them legally to move forward. Our real goal is to offer people the dignity of that conversation and provide honest legal advice. And that is what we're hoping to continue to do, because it's so stressful right now for individuals in our community. People are worried about how they will be impacted, their friends, their family. So we just really want to be a trusted resource for people.
And I'm guessing, Enrique, you probably hear about this all the time, just about how people fall prey to people who take their money but really can't do anything for them.
All the time, exactly. And that's the hard part, because, people sometimes get promised something that's completely absurd, and they fall victim to that hope. And unfortunately, they pay in, and then they never see any results. And so that's one of the amazing services that I think our attorneys are providing, is that, sometimes, unfortunately, you have to hear that hard truth. And sometimes you have to have those hard conversations, but it's better to hear that than to ask for money and then learn about it later.
Yeah. And it also sounds like the project deals with very specialized visas. I guess I didn't know about some of these. I mean, it's those looking for political asylum, or those who have been brought here maybe for human trafficking reasons, or even those can get visas who have helped perhaps law enforcement with prosecution.
Yes, a U visa is that. Is that type of visa. So yes, we focus mostly on humanitarian visas, asylum, trafficking, victims of crime, special immigrant juvenile visas. We've worked with some family petitions, adjustment of status, if maybe a J-1 marries a U.S. citizen and we can assist them with adjusting their status and obtaining a green card. Violence Against Women Act cases are also some cases that have touched our office. Work permits come hand in hand with all of these applications. So once we can help someone apply for that work permit, we do that as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there are people who have come to the U.S. with a tourist visa but never went home, I mean, what's the status? I mean, should they just leave and try and do it legitimately?
You know, I'm hesitant to give a clear answer on that type of a question. In that situation, we would say, please come to our office, bring any documentation you have. Mm-hmm. We'll look over it with the person and determine whether there is a pathway to apply for another type of status or not.
Yeah. If somebody were mm-hmm. to return from where they came, I mean, is there a passport? Is it docked? I mean, is it noted? I mean, is that visa checked, I guess, upon leaving the country by U.S. Immigration?
It depends on how someone leaves, right? Mm-hmm. So, again, that is something we'd love to see. If they have their passport handy, we could take a look and determine what type of entry or departure they had.
Okay, so it sounds like you got your hands full. You say you have a wait list?
Yes. I think our wait list now is at about 100 people. So we are working diligently. I know we're training some new volunteer attorneys. So if there's any attorneys out there in the community who are interested in working with us, we're happy to, you know, work with you on a case initially to learn how to do certain styles of cases. And we're working on building our staff. We've just recently hired a part-time paralegal, and that's been a huge help with organization and trying to be able to focus more on the legal work rather than some of the office-related things. We've all been, you know, it's been all hands on deck from the get-go. So building our staff is a huge effort and will help a lot.
And what kind of commitment would a volunteer attorney provide?
It really depends on what kind of time they have. When I first started with John, I did a case with him, an asylum case for an asylum seeker from Afghanistan. And then I took one on my own, and he reviewed it. So you can work as much or as little as you want. And we can look at cases that are less time sensitive or something that's a little more, needs a little more attention because there's a timeline involved.
All right, right. And people are these volunteer attorneys can work at home, or do they come into the office to work, or?
Both. Yeah. We have office space mm-hmm. right on Kearns. It's above the Tupelo restaurant. You'll see our vinyl if you're driving down the road. So we have office space and printers and staff who can help, and you can also work from home and then check in with us. We used to just have meetings at the library, so it's pretty cool to have a physical space at this point.
All right. Any ways else that people can support the project?
I'll be honest. We have had some really generous donors in the community. LiveGive was a huge success for us. We've had some fantastic grants from the Utah Bar Foundation, the Park City Community Foundation's Community Belonging Fund. Park City Municipal recently awarded us a special service grant. We have a gentleman, so financial donations are a way to help, is my point. We've also had some wonderful people just walk in and say they'd like to help. We have an incredible gentleman who came in and has been putting up shelving for us, and people act as interpreters for us when we need assistance with that. So there are a variety of ways, and to be honest, the offers to volunteer have been almost overwhelming, and I think that's a testament to what a wonderful place we live and work in.
Okay, a way to reach the project, how?
WasatchImmigrationProject.org. There's a contact form, and if you fill it out, we will reach out to you.
Okay. Any other thoughts, Enrique?
Yeah, I mean, just to echo Laura here, it's extremely helpful for the community. I've had people ask me how can they get involved with everything happening nationally, and this is a organization that, you know, it's so young, but it's already so trusted in the community. And so if you have time, if you've got the money, if you've got the want, you know, please come to us, and we would love to put you to work one way or another. But yeah, I'm super excited to see where this organization goes, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Okay. Enrique Sanchez, Laura Rojas, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:47. Hey, a heads up. Just somebody sent me a screenshot of travel times between I-215 and Kimball Junction. 2.5 hours. Stalled trucks around Lambs Canyon are causing a standstill to traffic to the mouth of the canyon. Should start clearing up soon. The Jackknife semi-truck apparently has been cleared. So again, if you have any other road or traffic conditions, you can certainly let us know at 435-655-8255. That'll need to be in the form of a text since I can't pick up the phone. In the studio now with an update from Summit Land Conservancy, I have CEO Cheryl Fox. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
So last week and 6 years later, we finally got the Treasure Hill conservation easement language approved. So it comes back to council for a final vote?
Nope, it's done.
It's done. Okay.
Yep. Well, it needs to be signed. We all agreed on the final language at the meeting on Thursday, which was exciting and I think a very thorough process. It did take much longer than I think anybody really anticipated that it would take. But in any case, the council did approve final language, and once we get a complete draft, I hope that the mayor will be able to sign it this week, and then we can record it, and it is actually preserved forever.
Okay. Talk to us a little bit about the easements and the implications, perhaps, for that town lift agreement.
That's right. Well, that was one of the things that we had a lot of discussions around. So when the city purchased that land in 2019, everybody knew that there was an existing lease on the property so that the ski area operator could have the town lift, maintain the runs, snowmaking, grooming, all that good stuff. So I think everybody wanted to make sure that that land is continued to be used as a ski area, you know, the surrounding neighbors, and it's great to see. I mean, looking out the window right now, I see people on that town lift chairlift for a 22-minute ride in the falling snow. So we knew all along that this land would be continued to be used as a ski area. If that town lift wants to be changed to maybe a lift that does not take 22 minutes, and they want to follow the same alignment, they don't have to ask for approval or anything like that from the Summit Land Conservancy. Because again, these are pre-existing uses. So the conservation easement is set to protect the view shed from across town. It's set to protect public recreational access, so the trails and Sweeney switchbacks and all of that kind of thing, the relatively natural wildlife habitat, and also the ski resort. So accommodating, you know, new buildings and structures for a ski resort with those other conservation easement or other conservation values is where we really get involved. Again, they have an existing lease, so there's an awful lot that they can do. But we had asked for approval rights, and that's what the council was able to grant us on Thursday night.
All right, but what if it was a major improvement outside that current alignment? Then what would happen?
That's where the Summit Land Conservancy does have a set of 5 criteria that, again, is in the conservation easement that says this is how we evaluate whether that new use is a permitted use.
Okay, and that would happen before an application is made, or, I mean, how does that work?
Ideally, it would, but a lot of times these things happen a little bit later. People realize, oh, shoot, there's a conservation easement on that property. One of the things that happens with Planning Commission is they don't always look at title to see that, oh, look, there's a conservation easement on this property. They tend to look at zoning overlays and things like that, which can change, but the conservation easement does not change. So the requirement in the easement is that the Summit Land Conservancy would get notice once the city realizes that they're, you know, contemplating doing something. And really, the only time we weigh in is if the proposed use is something really dramatically different.
Yeah. Give me an idea.
You know, sometimes people maybe would think, well, a resort use could be a building with a restaurant and bathrooms, things like that. That could be thought of maybe as a resort use. So that kind of use would maybe conflict with some of the conservation values.
Would something like that be allowed or maybe not?
You know, if they can do it in a way that fits with the conservation values, then that's okay.
Okay. You've got your annual conservation breakfast coming up. Tell us about this.
That's right. We're excited to be welcoming Brian Steed to be our guest speaker at the Conservation Breakfast on May 14th at 8:30 in the morning. Once again, we're honored that Deer Valley Resort is hosting this. It's a terrific breakfast. Tickets are $15, and this event does sell out, so we advise people to go to wesaveland.org and sign up. Brian Steed is the commissioner for the Great Salt Lake. He was appointed by the governor. He brings a lot of experience in land management, public lands management, to the role. And he has said famously that, there are terminal lakes. Salt Lake is a terminal lake. It doesn't have an outlet. There are terminal lakes all across the world that have dried up. And in other places, they've tried to save them, and they have not been successful. So Brian's call to action has really been, let's be the people who actually saved the lake. So he has a great insight onto how our work of land conservation here on the Wasatch Back actually supports the long-term health of the Great Salt Lake.
And again, that's one of your funds, right? The Future Fund, specifically to do this.
Exactly. Our For the Future campaign is exactly, because we realize that, you know, when we save private lands here on the Wasatch Back, we're saving the watershed for the Great Salt Lake. And the other thing that I think is important to remember is, you know, we've all heard that it's agriculture that's the problem. Agriculture diverts all the water out of the rivers. The reason for that is because for 150 years, people thought that every drop of fresh water ought to be used before it reached the lake, where then it could not be used anymore. So all of the laws and all of the practices are really built around diverting the water out of the lake. And part of those laws and practices mean that people have water rights. People own them. And as important as it is to save the Great Salt Lake, we don't live in a country where we just take people's stuff. So figuring out how we're going to work with the people who own the water to save the Great Salt Lake is an interesting and far-sighted project. And the Summit Land Conservancy is very involved in that.
Okay. People want to hear Brian Steed, wesayland.org, to sign up.
That's right.
And you started charging just to make sure that people put some money down and they do show up.
Well, we had an event a couple of years ago, and, you know, we didn't used to charge for the breakfast, and we said, yeah, you'll just come and it'll be great. But, you know, we anticipated, we had 200 RSVPs, and then it was a beautiful morning. And I think people decided to go do something else. And we had only a half of the people show up. And we had a lot of extra cupcakes at that event. So,
Okay. This Saturday, you have an event in Peowa. What's going on?
That's right. We've got a volunteer day from 9 to noon out at Marchant Meadows, which is this public access nature preserve that we are in the process of creating. We are still waiting for federal funding on that one. But in the meantime, we've been working on enhancing the river out there. So this is a project that we actually purchased, a piece of property that we actually purchased in 2020. And it has two braids of the Weber River on it. It's absolutely beautiful. And the reason we bought it was because it could have been developed into 6 homes, and it was on the market. And we thought, wow, we better just snap that off the market and see if we can preserve it. So we are looking for some people who would like to come out and help us stabilize the riverbank in some of the areas and do some work out there. So again, we would encourage people to sign up, and they can get directions and all that kind of good stuff. Okay. WeSaveLand.org.
And so is this, you own this by deed?
Well, we own it along with a loan with our friends at Grand Valley Bank. Grand Valley Bank has been a terrific partner. We bought it with a bridge loan. So we bought it in November of 2020. And we thought we would have, you know, maybe 18 months to pay it off. We have had to extend that bridge loan 4 times now. And again, Grand Valley Bank has been a great partner with us in that and giving us very attractive rates. However, you know, interest rates have not gone in our favor in the intervening 5 years now. So we are hoping that the federal government will finally, what we're doing is we will own this ground, and we're selling an easement to the federal government. So we have a purchase agreement for the easement, and they're just working through their due diligence process, which is very careful. You know, people are not wasting federal money in the NRCS, at least not in my experience.
Okay. So is federal funding an issue for more than just this parcel for you?
Well, we have some other, you know, we have $41 million in projects this year in 2025 alone at the Summit Land Conservancy. And most of that is federal funding. Some of it is still on hold. Some of it has been released. So we're working through. All of that has been obligated. And it does not include Marchant Meadows.
Okay. And you're also planning another moonshine adventure? Tell me about that.
That's right. So that is on, I think, the 12th of April. And
the 9th? Wednesday? I think it's a Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday
night.
The 9th? That's what I was going to try and look that up. Wednesday the 9th.
Yeah.
And this is, we, you know, meet at the base at PCMR and hike up and ski down under the light of the full moon. And this time we are partnering with our friends at Wasatch Backcountry Alliance, and there will be a tailgate afterwards. Again, we ask people to go to wesaveland.org and sign up. And, you know, it's fun to do these events with different partner organizations and kind of get to know each other and see each other face to face again. So, again, we hope people will, who are looking for a little adventure under the moonlight, come and join us.
Okay. Again, wesaveland.org.
Wesaveland.org.
Anything else? Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Cheryl Fox again, CEO of Summit Land Conservancy. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:58.